listening to Opus Talks, where you'll be in on conversations with insiders in the energy, chemicals, and environmental commodities markets. Guests share insights into the latest trends and innovations, industry challenges, and much more. Let's dive into the conversations that explore where the energy economy is headed, right here on Opus Talks.
You're listening to Opus Talks Renewable Fuels. I'm Jordan Godwin, Director of Renewable Fuels Pricing and News here at Opus, a Dow Jones company. And with me today is Brett Gibbs, an equity research analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence. You may be familiar with his work on Twitter under the handle at @OilandGibbs, where he shares fabulous insights and updates in the U.S. biofuel space. Brett will also be speaking at our upcoming 18th annual Opus, RFS, RINs, and Biofuels Forum in Chicago on October 13th, and I'm really excited about that. Brett, welcome to the podcast, sir. How are you doing?
Jordan, first off, thank you for having me. Really looking forward to joining you in Chicago this October, but here we're in the middle of August. We're about 3 weeks from the start of NFL season. It's hard not to be doing well, so thrilled for this time of year.
All right, absolutely. Yeah, it should be a lot of exciting things coming up in the NFL season and RINs as well. So just a bit of background on today's topic, the RFS and RINs. So for those unfamiliar, the RFS is the Renewable Fuel Standard. That's a federal law that requires refiners and importers of gasoline and diesel to blend certain amounts of biofuels each year. These figures, the Renewable Volume Obligations, or RVOs, are assigned by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA. And these fun little things called RINs, Renewable Identification Number Credits, are assigned to gallons of biofuels like ethanol, renewable diesel, biodiesel, renewable natural gas, and sustainable aviation fuel. Those RINs serve as a sort of token of compliance, which are often traded in the marketplace, and Opus provides daily price assessments for those credits. The price of the most common RINs, the D6 ethanol RIN and the D4 biomass-based diesel RINs, they're at all-time highs this year. Those RINs topped $2.50 in June. That was a level we had never seen before. And that translated to an RVO assessment of nearly 40 cents per gallon. I also want to note that Opus is widely regarded as the benchmark pricing authority for RINs credits, so there are futures contracts on the Intercontinental Exchange with massive open interest and volumes based on our assessments. So RIN pricing has kind of been our bread and butter for a while, but we really just scratched the surface compared to the kind of in-depth analysis that Brett does at Bloomberg. So Brett, I know that was a bit of a high-level opener on RINs and the RFS, but what am I missing? Like, what kind of work do you do at Bloomberg, and what's been the most interesting thing about RINs for you since joining this space?
Yeah, I've grown to appreciate the RFS is difficult to simplify, and I think you covered it quite well there, so nicely done. What my team does at Bloomberg Intelligence, we're equity research analysts by trade, so we cover a lot of the public equities in the space. Think of Darling Ingredients, Green Plains, Neste, et cetera. But really what we identified maybe 4 or 5 years ago now was, in order to cover these companies properly, we really need to understand the fundamentals of the policy it is that drives the economics. And so that's when we really started deepening our work within the RFS and modeling out every bit of it. And really our bread and butter, you kind of spoke to Opus's bread and butter being, you know, the RIN prices. Ours and our franchise is really the modeling of the full RFS and RVO to help our clients identify where the RIN bank currently is, the trajectory of it over, you know, the balance of an individual set rule, and even help the regulators themselves think about all the multi variables that go into making a rule, right? And I think that is probably the thing that I want to draw attention to, is that RIN demand is so much more multivariant than the headline mandates imply. Additionally, the flow of data is very lagged, and the ability to defer compliance and or carry excess credits is material for how RINs behave at any given stage of the compliance year, right? And then the one thing that strikes me the most about RINs is the layers of the markets impacted, as well as the pools of vested parties. You can perform the most comprehensive fundamental analysis and still have vulnerabilities across policy, legal, or physical flows. It's just a very, very dense market. So it's highly involved, a fluid space that I think presents a lot of opportunity. Particularly what's odd is RINs really isn't the core competency of a lot of the stakeholders that are truly, you know, impacted by it. So I think it's a very, very fun space to be in.
Absolutely. Well said. And you touched on it a little bit there, talking about what goes into EPA making a rulemaking and coming up with these RVOs. Can you kind of walk us through EPA's most recent rule that was published in March and what the market response has been so far?
Sure. The EPA finalized Set 2, which, again, this space is full of little abbreviations or acronyms. So Jordan and I will try and explain those as clear as possible. But Set 2 was the renewable volume obligations for the 2026 and 2027 obligation year. And the most important piece of that finalization was the biomass-based diesel category, or what we'll call as D4. So in 2026, we saw the D4 mandate 65% above 2025. It was set at 8.86 billion RINs. This was a result of sweeping industry alignment on D4 following oil major and refinery investments, and then the following them reeling from the Set 1 mandates, which were obligations from 2023 to 2025. Then after you had this broad stakeholder alignment, it emerged as a savvy outlet for the policymakers to really counter China exposed soybean oil consumption or soybean consumption broadly. So I mentioned that 8.86 billion RINs is the headline number, but additionally on top of that, there are about 1 billion RINs per year reallocated to mitigate the impact of what was rather unexpected SRE grants in August of 2025 that really addressed exemptions for multiple years in a single compliance period. So you got exemptions for 2023 all the way up to, we're still waiting on 2025, but those impacted the compliance year. So the EPA reallocated to counteract that. So the market following that finalization experienced a bit of whiplash because finalization was delayed. We got final rules in late March. By statute, they were due in the first week of November, November 1. And so entering that phase, you had a lot of pulled forward maintenance into 1Q. You had idle facilities that scrambled very quickly to try and ramp up volumes. Additionally, you had foreign suppliers who they were looking at their screens, and Europe was very, very strong in the back half of 2025, and they had booked volumes all the way through in the beginning part of 2025. So you had a very quick whipsaw effect that manifested in this RIN run-up. Now the market has chewed through much of that RIN bank buffer that we had, at least as we calculate there was at the end of 2025. We're still waiting for final data there, but there wasn't a huge chance for the market to catch up. Then enter the Iran escalation. That was very, very quickly thereafter. And this kept a bid into Europe that drew exports and trapped potential imports. And that really manifested itself into those record RIN prices, Jordan, that you mentioned at the top, right? We reached $2.50. We've since come off that a little bit, and we're hovering around $2.20, give or take, by the day.
Yeah, so EPA came out with that huge number, right? And the huge biomass-based diesel D4 number that you had mentioned. And in the early months of the RIN generation in 2026, it looked like we were lagging significantly behind pace. But I know we got a little boost, I guess, in the most recent data. You did mention there's a little bit of a lag there. But what's the latest? Like, what kind of trends are you tracking in the monthly RIN generation data? And what's our current trajectory?
Yeah. So the latest data we have at the time that we're speaking, we're expecting July data to come out here the third Thursday of August. So all we have right now is June data, but domestic renewable diesel generation in June smashed previous monthly records, which was December 2024, right before the 45Z tax credit really took place. And it beat that record by 9%. So it was well above, I think, where a lot of people thought based off of just the typical step up. So in June, total D4 and D5 generation was 862 million RINs. This was 11% above May. However, when we're talking about very, very strong production numbers, comparing this against what the monthly needs are. So we have, again, calculated because there are so many layers within implied RIN demand for the D4, D5 category alone, based off of the amount of exports that we saw in the June print, which again lags another 30 days. So it's really May exports that you're seeing in June data. But including 124 million RIN exports, the total demand was about 960 million RINs. So even with that record production number of about 862 million, we're still drawing the RIN bank by about 100 million RINs within the month of June. Now, when we're looking into July and into the balance of the year, so U.S. production strength, I think, will probably continue in July based off of where margins are. Margins right now on the screen are about, you know, anywhere from $3 to $3.50 on a gross basis. To put that in perspective, last year we were sub a dollar. So these are very, very material margins, and everyone is trying everything that they can. If, you know, everyone's in the money, so you're trying to produce as much as you can today. Now, this should manifest itself in, again, pretty strong July data. However, looking into August, we really start to see the impact of some downtime take hold. So within this space, unlike conventional refining, you really have short catalyst life cycle, which is the indicator of when you have to take a plant down for maintenance. And typically the industry can stretch anywhere from 12 to 18 months before they have to undergo downtime. But right now what we're seeing is there's already some downtime booked for August. So we're calculating based off of the existing announcements about 55 million RINs of downtime in August. So that's something to be on the lookout for. We think, again, July will be strong, but you'll see a little bit of this maintenance catch up in August. The last bit of that we're tracking is the flow of net exports. So again, we've seen a very, very strong export pull throughout the year because of just early bookings and then the strength in Iran. So biodiesel and SAF imports right now may moderately improve in July, but meanwhile, we don't see a ton of imports coming while exports are still being booked to Europe. So that's something to track here throughout the balance of the year, because we really do need to see the flip of what is currently net exports to flip to net imports. And the way that RIN balances are on a tight perspective, you don't have a lot of time or flexibility or give for some incremental downtime here beyond what we already have in August. So it's a very, very tight market throughout the balance of the year.
Wow. It feels like walking on a tightrope the way you describe it. I want to shout out also, I know we already mentioned your ex Twitter handle, but I want to shout out also, you do really cool work on the poll with the monthly RIN generation. Can you talk about that a little bit? What does that look like? When did that start? And what's been kind of the most interesting thing to come out of that?
Yeah, it's been a fun thing. And this is what I'd encourage anyone to. Really, my intentions behind the X account and all we do is really to bring clarity to what is a very, very dense, hard to follow market. So I'm always open for ideas and ways that we can help out the market and bring some clarity there. So it was all just going up into it where I was fielding a ton of questions. What's your view? What are you hearing? And I was like, you know what, let's just put it out there. And while we have to put the disclaimer around anything on X of you don't know who's responding to this poll, I think it gives you at least a little bit of color. So we put one out for the July data this morning, and the ranges were less than 825 million, 825 million to roughly 850 million, 850 to 875, and then greater than 875. So I would say right now, with about roughly 90 votes, 65% are in the 850 or greater. So again, people kind of agree with us that we think we're going to see another strong print following June and July. So June, for instance, was 861.7 million. So most people are in the 850 plus. So again, another strong print is the expectation here this upcoming Thursday.
All right. And you've mentioned the cumulative credit bank. That's such an important component of this whole thing, because there's a pretty big buildup of RINs, you know, from past compliance years that cumulatively build up amongst the obligated refiners, and we've been burning through that savings pretty quickly. What does your analysis show regarding how the cumulative credit bank is looking this year and how things might play out next year?
This is something where I was speaking to just so the rate, even by the time this rule was finalized in late March and in April, of how much we burnt through. So to put this in perspective, our calculation of where the bank ended 2025, which I reiterate is a calculation because we will not know final data until 2025 compliance is due. So 2025 compliance was delayed as part of this final RVO to September 1 of 2026. So we expect final 2025 data to come out really in the fourth quarter of this year. One of the components for it is also we're waiting a 2025 SRE decision. Our expectation is that it's going to come out here by the end of August, but this is something that could potentially impact that. So when I'm speaking to these numbers, it's our calculation, but we calculate that at the end of 2025, there were 1.65 billion RINs for D4 and D5. And then you add on top of that for D6, another 1.6 billion. So all in, you're at about a 3.2, 3.3 billion RIN bank, which is very, very material. The reason being is each year you have the capability to use when you go to meet your compliance. Roughly 20% of last year's vintage is the maximum. And so when you think about it, it's about 4.5-ish billion is the max. And we're at 3.3 billion entering this year, which is a very, very high RIN bank. And our modeling right now, it's again subject to fuel demand, subject to 2026 SREs, subject to a lot of different components that we're modeling throughout the rest of the year. We see a slight D4, D5 deficit and a slight D6 positive bank. So this is something where you're still drawing a very, very healthy amount. And this is predicated on some of our expectations, again, that we think steady domestic production throughout the balance of the year, a little bit more of a beef up or unwind in net exports, more imports coming in. So this is something that could be even tighter on the D4 side, I would highlight.
Wow. Yeah. I think a Valero executive, was it last week or 2 weeks ago? I think they said they see it drying up at some point next year, if I recall right. So it's definitely something that people are watching, throughout the space. You've mentioned the SREs, those small refinery exemptions. What about those? How do those factor in from a high level? And what's the latest around those? And how has the market responded to EPA announcements and changes to that part of the RFS?
This is the sole reason for the latest RIN breather, as I call it. So, right, we're the $2.50, we're now in the $2.20 or so. I mentioned when we were talking about the RIN bank, we expect 2025 decisions to come here by the end of August. However, we gather that there have been some differences emerging between EPA and DOE as it pertains to scoring outcomes. Supplemental 2024 decisions were released on August 3rd. They avoided a major pivot, yet the absence of 2025, I think, warrants some market caution, which is really what we're seeing here today. So, included in the decision on August 3rd was the EPA said that we're going to stick to this mandate of taking the scores from the DOE and then, using those as it pertains to issuing the exemptions. They did mention, though, within it that they had the opportunity for other economic factors in the case that they want to move against what the EPA receives from the DOE. So this is something that I think folks read as the EPA will be committed to what they set out and intended when they issued the original exemptions in August of last year, as well as when they projected exemptions for 2025 for what they intended to reallocate. So the EPA does have the ability to override versus DOE, but I think that's something to watch here as we still haven't gotten exemptions. And so the big read following 2025 too will be the read into 2026. So whether or not the exemptions will hold at the 2025 levels, we're modeling about 1.36 billion RINs exempt. The EPA has been using a much lower number for 25, 26, and 27. And so I think that will be an indicator there. And this is one of the things that just there's a lot of factors that could play out. So outside of what the final reading is for 2025, we're also in an environment here on SREs where refining margins are incredibly strong. And so that's something for the 2026 compliance years and beyond, whether or not that will have some impact or not.
Okay, absolutely. And what else have you guys been tracking lately? What are some of the most interesting developments on the horizon as it pertains to the RFS and RINs in this space?
I think one of the things that just outside of because we don't have good actual hard data on it and it's so lagged is fuel demand. So the EIA short-term energy outlook data continues to inch lower. Then on top of that, I mentioned maintenance for August, but really what is that throughout the balance of the year? So that 12 to 18 month lifespan. And then you add on just the routine life cycles, but it's also very, very hard to run any renewable diesel, SAF, biodiesel plant this hard at these margins reliably. And so that's something that we're also tracking because when we model all this out, it's under a thin margin of error on the supply side. So any unforeseen, unplanned downtime is pretty material. And then the other thing would just be obligated parties net RIN positions. So this is something a little bit more on the physical movements and RIN prices over the balance of the year. But in the second quarter earnings calls, we heard from a lot of the obligated parties that they are behind on 2026 compliance. So they are not buying at the rate of the gasoline and diesel that they're selling. And so this could create a little bit of a slingshot or a wind up closer into compliance, which is scheduled for March of 2027 for 2026, as some of these obligated parties might have to rush to buy RINs into that. And then I think the last thing that we're really keeping an eye on is when you look at this RVO dynamic and how tight the market is, I think one of the goals of policymakers would be that there is new capacity that would follow as a result of these very, very strong margins. But here in the US, we really don't think that that is going to be the case. The one place where there is new capacity scheduled to come online is Europe. And so I think that's a place that you really have to keep a close eye on into next year. So it's the lone source of supply growth throughout 2027. There's a really, really big plant of Neste Rotterdam expansion. It's 1.3 million metric tons per year is scheduled to come on at some point next year. So just keeping an eye on that because that might invite a little bit more of the capabilities to draw imports from Europe. So that's something. And then lastly, I think just with the headlines that we're seeing every day, you have to keep in the loop on the diesel or global fuel macro. And so that's something that is heavily dependent on the economics across all of these is just you wake up and you see how the Strait of Hormuz is, going in the event that you're seeing Ukraine take out the Russian infrastructure on the refining side. These factors have pretty sweeping impacts too on the RIN price backdrop.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't imagine how difficult your job is because there really are so many moving factors and different variables that play into all of this. All right, so let's close it out with one more plug for our upcoming conference in Chicago. Brett, you've been an attendee in the past and you'll also be on stage this year. What conversations are you most interested in hearing at this year's RFS event?
Nothing beats the RFS roundtable. Things have been uncharacteristically friendly in the cage, as I'll call it, the past few years. I think the latest backdrop invites some fireworks. And in mid-October, SEP3 lobbying will be in full stride. So I think this will be a good one. I'm looking forward to that.
Absolutely. You make a great point. It seems like the ethanol lobbyists and the oil and refinery lobbyists have been way too friendly the past couple of years, but they had some sparring and some big showdowns over like E15 legislation over the past couple months. So I'm sure they'll have plenty to say for sure. Thanks so much again, Brett, for all of your insights. I look forward to hearing you speak on stage in Chicago, and we hope to see you all there. There should be a link in your show notes, so be sure to follow that to get more information. Thank you and have a wonderful day.
We hope you've enjoyed today's insider conversation on Opus Talks. Join us next time for a deep dive into another industry insider's world. You can find more Opus Talks episodes at opusnet.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.